morning, and welcome to the Green Country Gardener program, right here on K1, the one you trust. Today's program is brought to you by Jensen Tractor Ranch, Green Thumb Nursery, Peter's True Value, and United Rentals. Get ready to sharpen your shovels. Good morning, and you can call in to the program today and give us your questions, your thoughts at 1-800-749-5936. Larry Glass is with us. I'm Tom Davis, and good morning there to you. A little cool weather on this
good morning,
last
half
of the week. Yeah.
What a difference the day makes.
God,
I was out there suffering in the heat, digging those big old holes, planting those big old trees.
Yeah.
And then the next day, what?
Well, 58.
I actually had to wear a coat.
A coat.
When you are used to the warm weather, a 60-degree, 55-degree weather is downright cold.
It is.
So you're not used to it yet.
Wow.
So anyway, golly. Anyway, it was good, except the rain kind of put the brakes on a few things.
Oh, goodness.
Give me a chance to get caught up on taxes.
You know how to live.
Right, and some inventory stuff and all that, and get our year-end report all finished up. But anyway, that's kind of what went on in the rain. I got some designs done and talked to some people. And so that's great. Anyway, golly, what are we doing in the yard right now? It's a great time to fertilize those spring bulbs. You remember the daffodils and things?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
Well, they're going to begin rooting out and starting to grow and all that.
Ooh.
So you want to get some fertilizer, fairly well-balanced fertilizer, say a 10-20-10, or even, believe it or not, bulb fertilizer.
Just happen to have it at the shop.
Exactly. Or just an even ratio for any flowering. For tomato fertilizer works real well, too.
Uh-huh.
And work that into the soil a little bit and water it down somewhat. And you'll have much bigger blooms and healthier bulbs and so on in the spring.
Very good.
So I had a whole bunch of little bitty daffodils in a little bed in my house, and I dug them up this summer, moved them to the back of the bed. So I don't know why they've been there 10 years. Why it suddenly occurred to me, well, if I put them in the back, I can plant things in front. Well, whatever.
It was a thought. So, that's what we're doing.
So that was done while they're dormant. Mm-hmm. And they're going to get some fertilizer this week, too.
Anyway. Yummy treats.
So that's kind of what's going on. A good time also to plant trees. We do have some new trees on hand. Lots of maples that change color in the fall. Maples. Autumn blaze, autumn flame. You name it.
I mean, it just looks like the artist's palette.
Exactly.
In the fall. We have some really pretty.
And some Chinese elm trees, and et cetera, et cetera. All these kind of trees that make good shade trees in the yard, if you will. And some oaks and so on. So those are in right now, so you might consider looking at those. We have some that are the big size already. They come with everything but a rake.
Everything but?
A rake.
A rake.
I mean, good size, you know.
Yeah.
And we do have free delivery. If you're somewhat overwhelmed by the size of these things,
mm-hmm.
you can bring them out. Yeah, Monday we got to plant a whole bunch of them at noon, a whole bunch of big trees.
Whee!
So we're kind of excited about that, too. So anyway, it's kind of time to think about that. Also time to consider planting a few shrubs, like the tired shrubs you have around the house. Perhaps you have some that just have not performed well.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps now's the time to consider putting in something that will perform well. And bring a picture by or something, and then we can kind of advise
mm-hmm.
on what kind of shrub you might want to get. So I had a guy come in yesterday, and he wanted a couple of real nice upright-growing plants, and I showed him several different examples of what would work so he can decide which one might be a good one to put around his in front of his house. So the underlying criteria was somewhat narrow and upright-growing, so we showed several examples of that, too. So. Anyway, so you can come on by, and we can also advise on what kind of shrub might work very well in front of your house, too. And, oh, golly, last spring, do you remember chickweed?
Yeah.
Henbit?
Yeah.
And crabgrass.
Oh, hell no, no. Keep it away.
Crabgrass. Ugh. It's a time, I did this to my yard at Fort Rain, but anyway, it's time to consider a pre-emergent herbicide. You have a ground floor opportunity right now.
Uh-huh.
to go ahead and control those nasty spring weeds.
There we go.
Remember those this big sea of purple in your front yard and the chickweed and how it bogs down the lawnmower and some of these annual grasses, the Poa annua. People really don't like Poa annua. It's annual bluegrass is what it is. And it if you have it one year, it drops seeds by the time it gets warm. And they're in the ground just
wait till next year.
Wait till next year. Just waiting for this kind of fall weather. That's when the seeds sprout. They sit dormant all summer long. Uh-huh. And they're waiting for an opportune. And now is their opportune time for them to start sprouting.
Ooh.
So your spring weeds, even though you don't see them, they will be sprouting right soon. So now's the time to do something about that. We have a product called Prodiamine, which is great for control of crabgrass. Prodiamine is also effective against summer and annual grasses, annual bluegrass, goosegrass, spurge, chickweed, and a large number of other annual broadleaf weeds. So it's very effective. It's safe to use on established turf. You don't want to use it on your putting green. If you've got a putting green in the backyard, well, you don't want to use that on
nope.
that. Anyway, and around ornamental and established annuals and perennials. So it's also under the name of Barricade or equivalent. Is the longest lasting and most economical due to its lowest application rates.
Okay.
So we have it in a great big old bag which has fertilizer incorporated with it. So the fertilizer used as a carrier so you can apply it. If you get the pure product, it's rather concentrated, then you want what we call a carrier.
Okay.
And that's, you put it in your spreader and go around your yard and water it in. So it's real easy for the customer to apply this in that form.
Got it.
So the liquid type, several herbicides, you have to know your square footage. In other words, say pendimethrin or surflan, you have to kind of know. It comes in a liquid form. And a lot of people don't know how many square feet are in their yard.
Oh, just measure.
It's not an exact science. You get a tape measure and measure the width and the length and multiply it, and you get your square footage.
There you go.
So if you really want to be accurate and you really want to make good use of your money and you don't want to overdo it and kill your plants, you need to really know your square footage.
There you go.
So you add up your total square footage on the liquid type herbicides, and then put it in a, say, a hose-in sprayer or a pump-up sprayer, and you spray that quantity over a given area. Now, what I like to do is use a thinner dosage. In other words, you might have to go over it twice, but for sure, you won't get three-quarters of the way through and run out of stuff.
Yeah. Whoops.
I put down too much. Oh, no. Well, you're cactus and whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, killed everything. So you want to be very careful how you apply it. And that's the advantage of the prodiamine in the granular form is it is easier to apply. Okay. And then you want to water that in, of course.
Sounds like the safest route.
It is. And it's fairly long-lasting, too.
Especially if you're bad at math.
Yeah. Now, a lot of people are concerned about existing weeds in the yard.
Yes.
Nutgrass, nut sedge. It's not a grass. Nut sedge is actually a member of the lily family.
It is.
And it's fairly easy to control with quinclorac.
Okay.
Now, that's available in several names and surface names or something, but it's kind of like these drugs that you get. They have a name people can remember, like Zizol or something.
Sure.
And then, but it... The name of the chemical is about a mile long, and if you know your Latin, you can probably pronounce
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but if you don't, you're like, I'm going to be at this for a while.
Really? So anyway, the quinclorac is a water-soluble selective post-emergent herbicide that kills broadleaf weeds and grasses in tolerant leaf turf grass species.
Uh-huh.
Bermuda grass is one of which. You don't want to use quinclorac on your fescue grass. Because you'll have a big bale of hay after you do that.
Oh, yeah, so you don't want that.
You want to make sure to use it only on your zoysia grass. Hopefully, if your zoysia grass is thin enough where you don't have very many weeds. But Bermuda grass tends to, it's kind of more hungrier fertilizer. People don't fertilize it very much. And you tend to get a lot of weed invasions and so on. So anyway, you want to, if you do have some nut sedge, it's a product of the moisture we had and this cooling weather coming on we're having. will be a good instigator of the of the emergence of a nut sedge right now. And it's easily distinguishable from the Bermuda grass in that it kind of grows quicker and towers above it.
So big clumps, is that what we're going to see? It's kind of shoot up there about 2 inches or so over there?
I have it in my yard. I don't worry about it because I don't have any soil.
You got that big old limestone.
Three days after it rains, I have to water my yard. And the nut sedge just doesn't grow in those conditions.
So you don't have to worry about it.
So it just dries up.
It just gone. Yeah.
and not so many words, Tom, yes. Oh, yeah. But anyway. So there are cultural ways to control the nut sedge, one of which is to allow the grass to dry out significantly between waterings. Let the grass get a little bit stressed, and it's a condition that is unfavorable for the growth of the nut sedge. So it can be controlled culturally, so you don't have to spray a bunch of chemicals on the ground and to control it. But quinclarac will also cause a discoloration of the Bermuda grass, yellowing of it, if you will, temporarily, but it'll come back. It purges itself of the stuff real quickly. So. Anyway, so it's not the, it won't really kill it, just make it kind of sick. So be prepared for that when you do that too.
Will do.
So and also, it's too early to worry about using broadleaf weed controls in the yard right now.
Uh-huh.
The dandelions, they're going to start growing, but they really haven't really started yet. The 240 is a post-emergent herbicide. You sort of need to know the difference between a pre-emergent herbicide and a post-emergent herbicide, and the quinclarac and the 240. And Trimec, and et cetera, there are a lot of these post-emergent herbicides. You put them on the weeds themselves.
Yes. Not in the area, on.
On it, yeah. So yeah, it's a good idea to do, if you do have a few of them, just a spot treatment here and there.
Yeah.
Or if you have dandelions, just pull them up and eat them.
They're yummity, yum, yum, good.
No, actually, they're a superfood, but... But I don't recommend that because the stuff people put in the yards, I wouldn't recommend eating that.
Not around here. It's 8:20. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to be back with more of the Green Country Gardener here in just a little bit. So stay tuned after this 2-minute timeout.
It's no wonder Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is home to Bartlesville's largest selection of quality plants. They have new inventory arriving weekly, including new shipments of hibiscus, shrubs, annuals, perennials, houseplants, and tropical plants too. Every Wednesday at Green Thumb is discount day. Save on all regular priced items. Bartlesville's largest selection of quality plants and more. That's Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday. Still offering curbside, pickup, and delivery service. Just call ahead. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nawata Road.
Everyone is talking about healthcare these days. America spends twice that of other developed countries on our healthcare system, yet our health ranks near the bottom. Primary care can help fix the problem. To learn more about the benefits of primary care, visit www.healthisprimary.org. This message is brought to you by America's Family Physicians.
There's nothing better than homegrown family fun, and the Washington County Free Fair is celebrating 106 years of food, fun, and family entertainment today.
Come out and support the 4-H and FFA guys and gals as they show their livestock, horses, beef, dairy cattle, swine, sheep and goats, and darling rabbits and poultry, as well as the pets.
Check out the exhibits, from fruits and vegetables to art and photography, clothing, needlework, craft, and science projects. So much talent, so much hard work, all in one place. The Free Fair is open to the public. Today, 9 to 3. For details, go to countycourthouse.org. Click under the County Information tab and select Fairgrounds and Free Fair.
It's all in Dewey at the Washington County Free Fair today. Join the homegrown family fun.
Good morning, and welcome to the Green Country Gardener Program. It is 8:23. Larry Glass, our expert. I'm Tom Davis, and your calls are welcome at 1-800-749-5936. That's toll-free, by the way.
Another indicator of the change in weather besides the weeds.
Besides the weeds.
Is pansies.
Oh, yeah.
Pansies and violas. We have those in stock right now.
Yeah.
It's that time of year to plant them. So you might consider doing that. And you want to kind of compose them a little bit, too, in the landscape.
Compose? Do tell.
Yes, compose. Yeah. So anyway, it's pretty simple. They don't grow
make them look nice.
They don't grow very tall, so you put them to the front of the bed. Perfect. And the plant from which pansies come is the viola. It has a smaller flower on it.
Okay.
And newer varieties have whole lots of little tiny blooms. So you might consider to give a little bit of textural interest, perhaps, mm-hmm. a composition consisting of both, where you have a clump of pansies, a clump of violas, a clump of pansies, and so on, going down the line like that.
Uh-huh.
So you save 5 plants each. And the reason why you want to put this down now is because they really have to develop a root system for them to survive the winter. Mm-hmm. Typically, winter is our driest time of the year here.
It is. I found that out.
Yeah, it's very dry, except when we have these big old 11-foot tall snows or something.
Yeah, that's once in a while. That's not the norm.
You weren't here when we had that big one.
No, I wasn't. How big was it?
How big do you want to be? No, it was. I think about 20 inches or so.
Wow.
Is it 2011 when we had that? And it was quite a snow. It happened in February. We normally don't get our snows until February.
Yeah.
So anyway, that gets the pansies ready.
Uh-huh.
And in addition to that, we had an extraordinarily cold snap too. Typically, when a cold front comes through, it's preceded by precipitation, be it rain or some form of frozen precipitation comes in before we have a cold front.
All right.
Typically, yeah. So it didn't happen a couple of years ago. It got really cold, killed everything.
But
anyway, usually we do have some form of precipitation prior to it getting really, really cold.
Sure.
So anyway, if you get your pansies in the ground and your kale and your cabbage and so on, get a good root system developed, they will tolerate the cold much better. And in the spring when they come out, golly, they're just so nice and big and full and covered in flowers when the cold weather finally breaks. They're rooted in the ground, and they do put on a really good show.
Nice.
So you might, if you've got a bunch of annuals, you might make a little bit of room for some pansies just so you'll have some color. Periodically through the winter, they will bloom. But take my advice, the earlier you plant them, the better they're going to be. And I think the really, really hot weather, I don't think it's going to get up to 100 anymore.
No, don't think so.
After the middle of this month, typically summer has...
Things kind of level off.
Summer has breathed its last gasp. and it won't get so hot anymore. So you might want to consider that. Also, when you plant pansies, when it's warm, you do not want to use blood meal on pansies when it's warm. Typically, that's kind of an association we do, a little bit of blood meal with that. Well, the nitrogen in the blood meal is readily available.
Okay.
And it does tend to burn when it gets warm. So you might want to throttle back on that a little bit. Maybe put a regular bloom-type fertilizer at this point in time.
Gotcha.
So typically when it's cooler, it's okay. We planted some pansies one time and it got hot. It just wiped them out.
Oh, boy.
The blood meal did. Burned them up. So So you don't want to do that when it's going to be warm.
So
right now you can probably just plant them in the garden soil as it is if you do have really good success with your annuals. But if you don't, you might want to augment the soil somewhat with some organic material. We do have several choices for organic material, the compost, the Happy Frog. There's a whole line of Happy Frog products. Happy Frog products. Well, that's a phonetical transposition, wasn't it? But anyway, a Happy Frog products. And then just some peat moss would help, too. So just something organic, just so the soil can be loose. When you take the pansy out of the pot, make a note of what the roots look like. It's kind of like a fuzz, really.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm. Like that dice hanging from your mirror. It's kind of fuzzy. And because of that, they really don't have a very strong exploitive root system.
Uh-huh.
So they need a loose material in which they can grow. So they can take on some water and stuff and prepare for the cold. Potting soil works really well, too. So anything to kind of keep the soil loose, and they'll do very well.
Very good.
Okay. Chrysanthemums, golly, we got a good selection of mums right now, too.
I bet.
They're about as big, how big around can you reach, you know?
Yeah, big as a barrel.
Some of them are that large. And they're getting ready to make a really big show.
Cool.
And I was at a house where we planted some mums last year. And she didn't do anything to them. We planted them in a lot. She had terrible soil, guys.
Oh,
just awful. So we put a lot of compost in there, and now those mums, they are as big as a bushel basket. They're just getting ready to pop right now.
Big and hardy looking.
So we're gonna plant some trees for her on Monday, some additional trees. But anyway, they're going to put on a really nice show. So the quality of the soil is very important. These plants, they're not indigenous to the area.
No, not at all.
So in our indigenous soil, they tend to... just kind of put her along and not do much. And what kind of reward is that for your efforts?
You know? Yeah, you got to help these out a little bit.
You got to help them along a little bit. And,
a little compost.
Now, there are some parts of town where the soil's really, really good.
Yeah.
So you don't have to do too much of that. But if you have to jump on your shovel.
You got problems.
And I've had to do some of that. Like I said earlier, I busted a solid metal shovel just digging holes in the ground.
That's some pretty hard dirt there, Larry.
You bet. Anyway. So I can't stress
and
that.
And you got the sharpest shovel around.
Yeah, I know it is. But this thing, it's solid metal. It weighs 30 pounds. And
ba-boom. Snap.
And I broke it.
No. Way to go, Knuckles.
Yeah, really. But anyway, you just have to make sure you can get a good hole in the ground and get that soil prepared, because our soil just doesn't work well for a lot of things. So anyway, so mums, pansies, chrysanthemums, new trees and shrubs, it's really coming into vogue right now. Later on, the bigger trees will be available, the big bald and burlap trees. I really can't dig those until we've had a good freeze. So that's middle of November. So those will be available. That's September, right, 2 months away.
Very good.
For the great, you know, the giant leaf rake ready trees. Those will be available.
The so, yard broom.
Those will be available pretty soon.
We're going to have more in just a moment. It's 8:30, and we're going to take this 2-minute time out.
Time to paint the house before fall hits. Peters True Value in Dewey has Easy Care Ultra Premium or Easy Care Platinum interior or exterior paint for $15 off each gallon you buy. For $15.99 per gallon, you can get Zinsser interior and exterior primer sealer. Save $4 with mail-in rebate. Pick up a 32-gallon Rubbermaid trash can for $17.99. Pick up a 1.1 gallon of ready-to-use Ortho Insect Killer for $9.99, saving $3 with instant in-store rebate. Hurry to Peter's True Value in Dewey and save.
Hello, this is Tim from United Reynolds. If you call United Reynolds Strategic Sales Team, you may not get someone directly with Bartlesville, but you'll get someone from the Tulsa Metro. We all pull out the same inventory. The reason we do that is so that we can give each customer the amount of time that they need. We don't want to rush anyone, and that's why we have a Strategic Sales Team call center. We are local and customer focused. You can give us a call at United Reynolds, 918-333-9580.
Everyone is talking about healthcare these days. America spends twice that of other developed countries on our healthcare system, yet our health ranks near the bottom. Primary care can help fix the problem. To learn more about the benefits of primary care, visit www.healthisprimary.org. This message is brought to you by America's Family Physicians.
Happening now.
Things are happening.
This election.
Joe and Kamala's ability to lead this country.
Survival of our nation is at stake.
And they're happening right now.
The pandemic. Climbing out. Progress on the vaccine.
Violent crime.
Defund the police.
The post office.
Return to school.
To get back to normal.
We're explaining what happened.
What's happening in our country.
Happening right now.
K1 AM 1400 and FM 93.3 for all the news you need. K1, the one you trust.
Alrighty, we are back, and it is 8:33, and of course, this is the Green Country Gardener Program with Larry Glass. I'm Tom Davis, and your phone calls are welcome at 1-800-749-5936. That'll get you on the air. What do we got going on now? We were talking about chrysanthemums
and all that, and what to do else to do in the yard. It's still time to divide those iris.
Yep.
So you're running out of time, but you might want to get a wiggle on if you haven't done that. I've got to do some at my house.
Uh-huh.
And I keep saying that, but I keep putting it off. Oh, God. This weekend, I'm actually going to... I didn't mow my grass last week, but a little bit. Yeah. But it's going to have to do the whole thing this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, we're looking at that, too.
Yeah. So coming up, make sure that blade is sharp. The grass is getting kind of tough and stringy.
Yep, it is.
So I need to remove that blade and give it a... probably its final sharpening of the season.
That's on the agenda this weekend, believe it or not.
Yeah.
We've got a system, got two little push mowers.
Yeah.
I'm going to do the front. Susie does the back. We get it done just about time to
call it a day. Remember to check the oil.
Always, because you don't want that season up on you.
Yeah, they are they're expensive precision machines. And
yeah.
They have to be maintained pretty well.
Yeah.
They can tolerate a lot of abuse, but...
check it every time. Just check it every time. You never know.
You don't want to put it out to the curb and have to go buy a new one.
No.
I had to put a new engine in mine a couple years ago.
You did?
Just because the engine wore out.
Well, you keep things around for 30 and 40 years.
Well, yeah, it is about 30 years old. So
your truck is about, what, 30, 35?
That's 35.
There you go. See, he maintains so well.
Yeah.
Got to take care of things.
They take care of things. They will last.
And they will last.
It's a big investment.
Except for that shovel.
Well, the shovel's a little different, I mean.
Yeah, no. You can't do much about that.
What could you do to maintain a shovel?
Keep it sharp. You tell me that every week.
Keep it sharp, yeah. But what else?
That's it.
That's it, yeah. And don't let it get rusty.
Yeah.
Especially at the welds.
Yeah.
But my shovel had a faulty weld in it, obviously.
There you go.
I brought it to the... salesman who sold it to me. Look, what? It says, go get another one.
Oh,
that's funny. Anyway, planting a tree. If people are interested in getting some trees.
And you can maintain these, and they'll last longer than you will.
The trees?
You bet.
Most of them,
yeah.
So, anyway.
Christmas trees, they come down pretty quick.
Yes. Anyway, locate properly.
Yeah.
Your first set of criteria in establishing the location of a tree is to locate it 15 feet away from obstacles. Obstacles meaning a sidewalk, a house, a fence.
Driveway.
A driveway, all the things. Secondarily, check for utilities. For no charge, you can have the OKI people come out and locate the electric, the gas, which is important. Yeah, boom.
They just send a person out there and put colors in your yard and throw little flags down there as opposed to come out there and repair it.
If anything, it's good modern art for the yard.
Well, it is.
But, yeah, you don't want to be without your internet.
Nope.
Or your telephone or your electricity or your sewer or your gas, all that other stuff.
All these things that make you civilized.
Yeah, you want to make sure those are not... We did a sprinkler system for somebody, and we had to put the sprinkler line underneath the gas line. It was that shallow.
Wow.
So when you do sprinklers or digging around and you see a utility line in your way, we do what we call an exploratory before we go in there with the trenching,
mm-hmm,
and find out where it is, how deep is it, and so on before we go on.
Saves a lot of whoops.
Yeah, whoops. So anyway, you want to locate all those utilities. That's a good idea. It's a good idea to kind of know where it is.
Yeah.
When I moved to the house I'm in now, the utilities went right through the garden. Well, they're 30 years old, so.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Well, you found them.
I had them relocate them somewhere where the lines won't interrupt with my activity going on.
Gotcha.
Could you please put them over here on this side of the house rather than over there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, sure, be glad to. And I did all the rewiring up in the attic and all that. So anyway, so check for those utilities. It's very important to know where that is.
Uh-huh.
And the sewer line from your house, they really, really will not tag that at all. Well, a good thing to know when you move into a house or when you live in a house is where is the sewer clean out.
Yes.
is this little round thing with a square cap on it somewhere in the yard. Usually it's in the back where it's close to.
Is it PVC mostly?
PVC mostly, yeah. And it's close to, there'll be a stack on the roof, and it'll be fairly close to one of those stacks in on the ground somewhere.
Gotcha.
So look, if you have, some people have stacks all around the house, but it's going to be around one of them.
Gotcha.
So, and then you should see this round hatch, if you will. And typically your sewer line runs either straight out from that or at an angle or somewhere. But most of the sewer lines are down deep enough. But it's a good idea to know where that is so you don't plant a willow tree or a magnolia tree up on top of your sewer line and cause some problems. And knowing the composition of it also, if the house is built, say, before the middle 70s or something, it might be this alumite pipe. And if it's built before the 50s, it might even be clay tile. There are probably even a few clay tile sewer lines still working. I don't know, but I had one on a house I owned, and it was that tar paper stuff. Revolutionary sewer line. Nothing will get through. Yeah, well, it collapsed.
Yeah.
And it's full of elm tree roots. So anyway, the daughter and I replaced the line out to this. We had a plumber come in and hook it up. So it helps to know where all that stuff is, so you don't run into a problem. And actually, if it is a shallow sewer line, the root can go underneath it and actually raise the pipe up with the root and cause the material in there not to run out as quickly, and it'll cause a backup.
Oh,
so
boy.
It's just, you just need to keep it away from that. And phone lines and all that, it's not important that they be really that far away from it, but it's a good practice to kind of keep it away, just so if something does go wrong, or if you want to upgrade, they'll know where it is, and they can run a new line or something in the same place. So we were talking about fiber optics a little while ago. And actually what I did on my utility stubs is I buried a PEX pipe from there all the way out to the little things that come up. And what do they call those? Those little boxes?
The little boxes.
The utility boxes.
Yeah, okay.
Stubs or something. I don't know what they call them. But, and so they can just fish a line through that. And
well, the power box.
When the time comes for an upgrade on the cabling or whatever.
Sure.
So that make it real easy for them. They don't have to call Charlie out to dig a big old trench. They just feed it through this 3/4-inch pipe and bingo.
It's there.
It's all done. Yeah. So watch out for those two. And also on the tree, you want to prepare a hole that's twice the size of the root ball and at least as deep as the height of the root ball. One thing you never really want to do is to plant it deeper than the surrounding soil. That's the primary cause for people losing their plants after they plant them. And I've gone to a lot of people's houses and said, why did my tree die? And they said, it's in the ground 6 inches too deep. They're trees. They're not tomatoes. You can do that with tomatoes, and they'll do okay. But the trees are absolutely intolerant of being planted too deeply in the ground. If anything, plant them a little shallow.
Okay.
Adjust the height also for the density of the soil. If you have a very clay-heavy soil, you might want to perhaps create a bit of a mound in it so the tree can adapt to the clay soil. So these trees are used to being growing in a pampered their whole life. And then you bring them out to the wild like that, basically. And it's a whole different set of rules. And if the drainage isn't good, they have to be able to adapt to that. The root system will change. They'll lose a lot of the lower roots, and the upper roots will spread out. And it takes a little bit of time for this to happen. So make sure if your soil is really heavy that you do mound it up a little bit. So it's kind of an inverted bowl on the ground, if you will, but not too high. Maybe a couple inches so at the most.
Got it.
And that would help it adapt to the heavy soil. If you have average soil, just make it flush. So this is kind of true with most species, but not all of them. There are some of them that the trees are environmentally adapted to an upland condition. Dogwoods is one of them. And a lot of people, dogwoods don't make it because they plant them either too deeply or flush with the ground, and they're just not prepared to handle a heavy soil. Their root system is just not adapted to that. So these plants are pretty well tuned into their environment. And we put them in an area that they don't tolerate. They just can't handle it.
They just
kind of have a meltdown. And
it's not good.
So make sure you let them usher in on this environment and pick an area that that they will grow, that they will live in. In other words, don't plant a dogwood at the bottom of a ravine, if you will. They're not used to that.
Don't give it the recipe for disaster.
Exactly. And if you have any questions, you can ask, where would be a good place to plant this? Or I can come to your house and advise and consent to. I do a lot of that. You just set up an appointment and I can come out and kind of tell you where what will do well in a certain area.
Been at it a little bit.
You what?
I said you've been at it a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. So anyway, after you've figured out the vertical elevation of where the root ball should be, you want to mix about 30% compost with the backfill.
Okay.
That's typical with our soil here. We just use that as a kind of a generic recipe. And you can adjust that a little bit depending on your conditions. It's good for the barley soil due to the poorness of our soil. And then you want to backfill it and water it in real well. Okay. Now, you notice when I'm out there planting a tree, my guys don't always do it, is I stick the hose in the ground below the tree.
Really?
Yeah. Now, what that does is it collapses any air pockets that might be in there. So you want to put the soil, the hose, kind of shove it into the ground beside the tree and let it run. And you'll notice the soil will settle down. That's because all those air pockets that you thought you had.
Wow.
Will cave in. And then you can put some additional soil on the top.
Pretty cool.
Level it up. So you want to go ahead and water it in real heavily when you do that. A root stimulating fertilizer may be helpful depending on the environmental conditions. If it's real stressful like that, like hot, if you will, and rather dry, you might want to get a root stimulator so the roots will grow out quicker and be able to draw up moisture and nutrients for the tree so it can tolerate the conditions real well. So we just mix it with compost, and they do rather well. Okay. And staking is very important. It's windy here.
Yeah, let's give it a good start. Keep those stakes in for a while. Let it go nice and straight.
You don't want to Acer horizontalis. No. No, that's okay for junipers, but not.
Not
maple trees. So typically when we stake a tree, we use 2 T-posts.
Okay.
So if you're planting it yourself, you can get those fairly easily at the lumberyard store over here, and then the 2 farm supply store, they have them fairly inexpensively. Get a couple of T-posts and some bale of wire and an old piece of hose and hose them. And typically we put the T-posts on the north and the south of the tree. Our prevailing winds typically are the north and the south. So that's how we orient the staking. And do that for about a year until it gets established. It should be, you take up the T-posts and use them for your tomatoes later on.
We're going to have to take a quick break here, Larry. We're going to come right back after this 2-minute timeout.
It's no wonder Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses is home to Bartlesville's largest selection of quality plants. They have new inventory arriving weekly, including new shipments of hibiscus, shrubs, annuals, perennials, houseplants, and tropical plants, too. Every Wednesday at Green Thumb is discount day. Save on all regular priced items. Bartlesville's largest selection of quality plants and more. That's Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses, open Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5, noon to 5 Sunday. Still offering curbside, pickup, and delivery service. Just call ahead. Green Thumb Nursery and Greenhouses on Nawata Road.
Thank you for starting your day with K1 Morning News.
Today is gonna be a good day.
Keep going what you're doing. You're the best on radio.
My respect, you guys. You guys are always top of your class.
Today is gonna be a good day.
K1 AM 1400 and 93.3 FM.
A good day.
And online at bartlesvilleradio.com.
Melissa Wandel was 9 months pregnant with her first child when her husband Mark was killed in a car accident. His life insurance made a huge difference for Melissa and her daughter Madison.
I wasn't going to have to worry about going to work every day, leaving her in the hands of somebody else, struggling day by day to get by.
A message from the nonprofit Life Foundation.
Don't start your day informationally distant.
Get up close to get the latest news.
An earful of information.
It has to be based on the facts.
K1 Morning News. I'm Tom Davis. Join us each and every weekday at 6 a.m. Phil Weaver has your weather and entertainment. I'll have all the latest headlines. Evan Farbach has the sports.
Connect residents to information.
You can't go wrong waking up fully informed. K1 Morning News on K1, AM 1400, FM 93.3, the one you trust. It is 8:48, and you're listening to the Green Country Gardener program, and Larry Glass has all the information, and we've just got done talking about maple trees and staking them.
Staking them, planting them, and all that?
Yeah.
Then the next question they ask is, how often do I water this thing?
How often do you water that thing?
When it gets dry.
When it gets dry. Okay, there you go. How do you know when it's dry?
I get so many scornful looks when I say that.
How do you know that it's dry?
Well, after you put your mulch on the surface.
Sure.
To help cut down on water loss.
Sure.
It helps the appearance a little bit, too. Mm-hmm. You put a little bit of the mulch aside and inspect the moisture content of the root ball itself.
Okay.
And then check it on a daily basis. Excuse me, goodness. And then when it gets to be a little bit dry, then you want to go ahead and apply some water. And also say water it in the morning.
Ooh, yeah.
Well, why is that? Because the hose is sitting out in the sun.
Yeah, you don't want to spray you don't want to cook water.
It. Yeah, yeah. It'll golly, we're using the hose on a project. and so the hose was sitting out in hot sun. And it's hot, too hot to touch.
Bad hoses causes like that.
The roots do their water absorption through root hairs. Tiny little red hairs come out. And the roots themselves don't really absorb the water. But the hairs on the root absorb the water, and the extremely hot water causes the collapse of these root hairs. And then because of that, the roots cannot absorb the water without these tiny little red hairs. So that's why we like to give them a cool drink, if you will, just so the red hairs don't get adversely affected by a scalding hot Folgers coffee water, you know?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's a heck of a burn.
So that's kind of why I say water in the morning. So some people, I got this big old tree, I'll just leave the hose sitting on the ground. That way I don't have to drag it out, then come home from work and the water's 200 degrees in this hose and they turn it on and tomorrow the tree's dead. What'd I do? Well,
you scalded it.
you cooked it. You now have a tomato steak. So it's important to water it. And after a while, you'll develop a schedule from which you can develop. Uh-huh. And as time goes on, that watering can wean the tree away from that watering. Now, we did a landscape this year where we put in some rather large crepe myrtles. And the root system was contained closely within that root mass. And being large as they are, and as windy as it was, they lost water rather quickly. Uh-huh. So we had to water them every day. After about a week, every other day. And now that they're in the ground, you don't have to do anything. I told the customer the roots have to go beyond the root mass and absorb the surrounding water. You really don't want to water too much too long. You just want to water enough to saturate the root mass because the soil around it is being irrigated with a sprinkler system. And if you get too much water, you have what we call root rot. So that's why you want to have an interval between waterings that allows the soil to dry out a little bit so the root system doesn't get rotted away. Uh-huh. That's another leading cause of people losing their plants is too much water.
You want to drown them.
And the symptoms of root rot are the edges of the leaf start to dry out. Usually when that happens, it's too late. You've lost too much of the root system. So you do want them. It's actually better to let the trees wilt a little bit waterings than it is to keep them up all the time. Let them dry out a little. It won't hurt them any. It'll encourage them actually to put roots out into the surrounding soil. If the roots, keeps them from being lazy, if you will, and going out and exploiting the surrounding soil for their nutrients and water. So it's best, it's better, and this these crepe myrtles, it won't hurt it. It'll be just fine. Let it wilt a little bit. You'll see. And sure enough, right now, you don't have to do anything to them there.
Yeah, they're on their own.
They're starting to bloom, too. So that's kind of fun.
Looking kind of pretty.
Okay. Anyway, that's kind of it with planting things. and watering and all that. And next, people are asking about is, how do I plant grass seed?
How do you do that?
Well, we sell one variety of grass seed called Five Star. It has several different varieties of a grass seed in it. Yeah. And it because of that, it does well in a wide variety of conditions. So it's, and we have a lot of people come back and buying some more. So it's, I thought I had a snapped a label on that, but I guess it didn't. Anyway, it does real well here. And I like it because you do get a good, even uniform texture of grass, some fine with some coarse and all that. And it's really very nice, nice result from this stuff. But you make sure you have enough light, first of all, when you plant your grass seed. Dappled light, at the least. Okay. You can't tell today, because you guys at the weather area,
yeah,
whatever you do.
We pulled the shades
cloudy
on you.
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell. Yeah. Well, anyway, you should know pretty well. If you have a lot of trees in your backyard, chances are your grass is just not going to do that well. Uh-huh. So you need to ensure that you have what we call dappled light. That is some sunlight getting through between the leaves, whatnot of the tree, or if the tree has a heavy canopy, you might trim up the canopy a little bit just so some light can get in there. They say on the bag, yeah, fescue grass grows in the sun or the shade, but there's shade, and then there's shade.
Yeah. Can't photosynthesize if you ain't got the photo.
Well, it's not so much a photosynthesis, it's the onset of fungal diseases, too, in the shade. Ooh, all these factors play into that. So you need some light in there to help the grass so it can develop enough energy to grow. Uh-huh. These things are solar powered, you know.
Yes, they are.
Try to charge your Tesla up in the shade. It won't work.
No, won't do it at all.
You got to have it in the sun.
Yeah.
So they do require some dappled light, if you will.
Okay.
So, and assess your soil conditions. Soil should be light and airy with a pH between 6.5 and 7. Uh-huh. So that's kind of a narrow range, but the grass needs that narrow range. Typically, our soil here is around that range anyway.
Good.
Except some parts of Woodland Park where it's like pickle brine. So really a soil test, you've got time right now to do a soil test. We've got a broad window right now for the grass seed, so you have some time to have a soil test done. So you know exactly where you sit chemically with your soil prior to planting your grass seed so you can be successful. It's about $15 from the extension agent.
Wow, that's not bad.
So then got a pound of grass seed, $2.50, so that ends up pretty quick. See, most of the river bottom soil that's around here compacts easily and smothers out the roots on your grass, so you want to add organic material if your soil gets a little sloppy after it rains. If it stays muddy for a long period of time, chances are the soil is too heavy.
Ooh, okay.
So you want to augment your soil somewhat with peat moss, compost, or whatever.
Good
mix of soil, yeah. So get out the tiller.
There you go.
Maybe, hopefully the engine will start.
Get the tiller out. We're going to finish up on the grass here in just a little bit. We're going to have to take a three-minute timeout here for our stations along the network lines. And you're listening to the Green Country Gardener.
The original Waldorf Astoria Hotel on Fifth Avenue in New York City was built in 1893. Constructed in the German Renaissance style, the hotel had 450 guest rooms and another 100 rooms for staff and servants. After merging with their next-door neighbor, the Astoria Hotel, in 1897, the hotel had 1,300 rooms, making it the largest hotel in the world at the time. The Empire Room at the hotel was the largest and most lavishly decorated room in the Waldorf and quickly became one of the finest restaurants in New York City. From the beginning, the Waldorf was the must-stay place for foreign dignitaries from around the world. Some of those guests were the leaders of China, the Prince of Siam, the Grand Duchess of Russia, and many others. Andrew Carnegie was a regular guest at the hotel, and the Waldorf Astoria Bar became a favorite haunt for many of the financial elite such as Diamond Jim Brady, Buffalo Bill Cody, and Bat Masterson. In short, anyone who was anyone in the world of politics, society, business, or entertainment wanted to be seen at the Waldorf. It truly was the world's hotel. Following the tragic sinking of the Titanic, the Waldorf Hotel was the official site for the inquiry that was performed by the United States Senate into the disaster. With this backdrop, our very own Frank Phillips was a major player at the Waldorf. In 1929, a private corporation was formed by Uncle Frank, and he became part owner of the Waldorf. Later that year, they sold the buildings and the land to a corporation named Empire State, Inc. Their plan was to demolish the hotel, which they did, and build the Empire State Building in that location. In July of 1929, prior to the demolition, Frank Phillips inspected the hotel and paid particular attention to four handsome chandeliers which hung in the tap room of the hotel. When the hotel was gutted in preparation for the demolition, Frank was given those ornate lights. He promptly shipped them to Oklahoma and had them hung in the great living room of the Woolerock Lodge, where they illuminated family gatherings, business meetings, cocktail parties, poker games, and many other social events. Whenever asked by guests about the lights, Frank liked to joke and say they were all that he got out of his investment, calling them his million-dollar chandeliers and declaring them the most expensive in the country. The magic of New York City and the Waldorf Astoria from 1893 is still part of the lodge today and the wonderful history of Woolerock. That same magic still exists. Welcome home to Woolerock.
K1 News Drive at 5 with Garrett Giles. Sports with Max Gross. Everything you need to know before you get home. K1, the one you trust.
And welcome back to the Green Country Gardener Program. Larry, what else we have here? We were kind of talking grass.
Yeah, talking about planting grass seed. And to sum it up, you want to keep the grass seed moist until it starts to grow.
Okay.
And then kind of like the trees, you can back up a little bit on the water as it gets established, as it gets its roots into the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to water so much. You don't want to let it wean away from that water a little bit. Anyway, come by the nursery and check us out. We've got everything from Acers to Sisyphus.
Wow.
If you're into Latin. But okay. Anyway, and all kinds of plants to look at, and some that might even surprise you. Check out our Monarch incubator. We've got some Monarch butterflies. We've grown quite a few Monarch butterflies. I don't know how many for sure, but and we release them out to the nursery. They immediately go for those butterfly bushes and lantanas. They just love that stuff. So anyway, we're located on No Water Road, right between Madison and Washington, and keep your shovel sharp. We will see you next week.
American Heritage Bank, now serving the Osage region of Bartlesville, Pawhuska, and Barnstall.
This is KWON Bartlesville and 93.3 FM K227 CQ Bartlesville.